Okay, let's get started with intros. We can go around the table starting with me. My name is Vanessa. I use they pronouns. I'm from Mill Creek. And I'm here because renters are being kicked out of their homes because of rising rent costs. And there is a lot that can be done about it, and there's not enough policy to support renters. If you could give your name, the pronouns you use, where you're from, and why you're here.
In a small room at the Smith Library in Mill Creek, the AC blasting inside and library goers flipping through magazines just outside the door, 10 people sat around a table to talk about their housing concerns at Wasatch Tenants United's inaugural meeting.
I'm here because everyone I know pays too much for rent, and it makes being alive very difficult and unfair.
My name is Duncan. I use he, him pronouns. I'm here because I saw something like this work in Portland, or is beginning to work in Portland, and I just am also an advocate of sensible public policy.
I'm Steph. I use they pronouns. I currently live in Marmalade in Salt Lake City, and I'm here because in the past year and a half I've lived in my neighborhood, I've seen rent double for all of the housing around me. Which sucks. So.
This is In the Hive. I'm Emily Means. Housing is, of course, a huge topic of discussion along the Wasatch Front. There's the affordability issue, where Utah's minimum wage earners would have to work 98 hours per week to pay for a two-bedroom apartment, the National Low Income Housing Coalition reported for 2018. And there's the availability issue. There's not enough housing to keep up with the growing number of residents. A study from the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute found that since 2011, the number of Utah households has increased by 158,100, but only 114,600 new housing units have come online, meaning Utah is short 43,500 units. Wasatch Tenants United's mission is to secure safe and accessible housing for all people in the state of Utah. I asked Ian Decker from the group, what should accessible housing in Utah look like?
There's lots of things that kind of bar people from even applying. There's application fees. I know that one of my friends recently applied for a handful of apartments and ended up spending like $150 on that alone. I mean, also there's accessibility. I think a lot of it is location. You talk to people about, oh, this costs too much, and they say, well, move to a cheaper area. But, you know, I think that neglects a lot of things. One of them is, you know, your family might have historically, you know, lived in an area of Salt Lake that is now becoming increasingly expensive. Also, you know, you might work in an area. You don't want to move out to Magna if you work downtown. Even by that logic, you know, give it 10 years and you'll have to move out of Magna because it's becoming too expensive.
What are some of the issues that Wasatch Tenants United is specifically focusing on?
I mean, right now we're trying to, we're starting in a couple of areas. And basically what we're looking at is looking at areas that are becoming new urban centers, that are seeing more development, that are seeing rising rent costs, and seeing a higher demand from outside investors. And we're trying to make sure that, you know, that those apartment units existing there, and that hopefully in the future, this is the long-term aim, to make new buildings more affordable. But in the meantime, you know, we're looking specifically to push for relocation fees, which would make it so that if landlords hike the rent up a ton just because, you know, the market, it's profitable for them to do so, they would have to pay to move people. You know, that's just like one example. And, you know, just other things that disincentivize landlords from evicting long-standing tenants in favor of new, wealthier tenants from out of town, or, you know, not even necessarily from out of town, but just newer, wealthier tenants.
Well, I think people would argue in a lot of these cases, those landlords own the property and shouldn't they be able to decide who gets to live there?
I mean, I think that that's one argument. For me, at least, I think that there's some priorities here. Some people, you know, you need a place to live. As we've seen in a lot of cases, you know, especially here in downtown, there's I wouldn't say a homelessness problem. There's a lot of people who are homeless. They are without, you know, a place to live. They're without shelter. And that creates a lot of problems. You know, I mean, you could say, well, this is the landlord's building. But at the end of the day, I think that the priority for us as an organization is making sure people have access. You know, we see housing as a right, not as a privilege, which I think is a viewpoint that's desperately needed in today's environment.
Why are you personally involved in this group?
Well, I live in the Mill Creek area. We're seeing a lot of development there. That's just one example. You know, I'd like to live where I grew up. That's my ideal. You know, and that's a big part of it. But also, I really think, in the long term, we need people who are able to live, like, not just where they grew up, but also, like, live areas that are actually, like, existing communities. You know, you can move out to South Jordan. You can move out to a lot of places. There's a lot of cheaper housing out there. You know, you can move out to Eden and buy a house for $200,000. But there's not people out there, you know. And we think that it's people who are being pushed out, you know, making $30,000 a year. Again, I was talking, you know, there's steel workers at Weir. There's, you know, there's logistics workers all over the West Valley. And they're not making enough to live in these new houses. But they're the people who are making this thing possible. This whole community, this whole everything is being built up by people who aren't even going to be able to live here. And I think that's a tragedy, personally.
You mentioned the relocation fees for renters who haven't been able to continue their leases. Can you talk about some other policies that you might recommend to address the issues?
I mean, in the long term, I think public housing is the and well-funded public housing is a long-term solution. I think that's what we'd like to see in the long term. But in the short term, there's other things. You know, we have a lot of at least supposed tenant protection that just goes unenforced. You know, there's other things that could just standardize leasing processes and standardize leasing contracts. Okay, I mean, just one example. You know, landlord right now, you know, they're supposed to give you 24-hour notice before they enter your home. That's the standard of the law. But according to a lease that they make, they could say 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And that's totally legal. And so there's some things, you know, like we could have a bare minimum of leasing, you know, bare minimum of like standard of quality of a lease for a tenant, and also enforcement mechanisms for the rules in place, which just don't exist right now.
Why do you think those policies would work here in Utah?
Well, they've worked other places. They've worked in Portland. They've worked in Seattle. They've worked in similar housing markets. I don't think we often think of Salt Lake City as one of these big kind of like fancy cities. I definitely don't think of it as one similar to Portland or Seattle. But the housing market's pretty similar. You know, I think in the last thing, we're either in the top 20 or top 10, like most expensive cities to live in. You know, and that's no coincidence, you know. So I think we should look at other cities that have dealt with these problems and, you know, avert larger problems developing. If we don't address these things now, we're going to have to address them later when, you know, these problems have developed into a more crisis state, I guess.
What you're trying to address here, do you think of it as a landlord problem or that there aren't clearly outlined policies in place?
I think that you could always say, like, well, if every landlord was just good, then these things would be better. I'm from a family of plumbers. We deal with landlords often. And just to be fair, a lot of times landlords care a lot and they can't afford things. So, you know, I think that it's more about the standard of policy. You know, and again, we could say there's a lot of bad landlords. There's also some good landlords. We could really go back and forth on like who the good ones are, who the bad ones are, what to do to make landlords better. But that's not our focus, at least not our larger focus. Our larger focus is going after policies to make landlords have to be better so that, you know, you don't have to rely on your landlord having a good day or being a good person to live a good life.
I'm not trying to be, you know, a glass half empty kind of person on this, but it does take time to change laws and sometimes they don't change at all. So what do you think the consequences are of no action being taken?
To address the first point, I think that very often, like you said, you know, this is not going to be a quick battle. And the people who are involved in the organization, we don't see it as something that we're going to be able to finish in a month or a year even. You know, what our plan is we're going to be actually in the communities talking to people, and that can take years. And we're ready for that. You know, this is definitely a long game. And, you know, as far as the consequences of inaction, I think that it actually goes all around. If we want to have overall harmony here and avoid a larger crisis, you can look at New York in the 80s and the late 80s. You know, there was and sometimes even violent conflicts between, you know, people who were homeless trying to live and people who were trying to move them along. You know, you had large-scale occupations of apartment buildings. That's just one, like, extreme example. And I think even more generally, you know, like, we already have a homelessness crisis, you know, and there's a lot of things that come with that. People have more exposure to, you know, all kinds of problems. It's really hard to get back up on your feet once you've kind of fallen down in those situations a lot of the time. So, yeah, I mean, I think inaction, it will lead to a lot of the problems we're already seeing becoming much worse and maybe even, you know, escalating to something more serious. So that's what I think. I think that we address these things now, then we can avoid more serious problems in the future.
So the last thing I wanted to bring up is that the founders of this organization are all pretty young, and just eyeballing it from your meeting over the weekend, it seemed like many of those attendees were young too. So mm-hmm. Do you think these issues are something that millennials and that age group is dealing with more, or that they care about more maybe?
I think part of it, you know, there's a lot of energy in being young. And, you know, you see something wrong and you think the world's still green to us and we can still go about and change it. A lot of times people who have been, you know, homeless for 10 years or have been, you know, dealing with bad landlords for 20, 30 years, they think this is just the way things are. So, I mean, I think there's a certain attitude with that in youth. But also we're people who are newer to the housing market. We're seeing the problems and we're dealing with them firsthand. Whereas someone who's already kind of broken into it and kind of in a rhythm, you know, so again, I think that it's a mixture of things. And also what we hope in the future is that we have people of all ages. While this starting of the group is, you know, small, like we said, we're going to be reaching out to tenants. We're going to be talking to people. And that'll necessarily mean, you know, talking to elderly people, talking to people who are older, middle-aged, people of all ages, anyone who deals with a landlord we want to talk to. That's kind of our standard. So hopefully that'll change in the future. But yeah, I mean, I think that these are issues that young people care about for both material and maybe that we're a little bit more just naturally angry.
Well, Ian Decker from Wasatch Tenants United, thank you so much for talking with me.
Absolutely.
The National Low Income Housing Coalition report also pointed out that 30% of Utah households are renters, which means you might know someone who has had an experience like this.
Well, I used to live in West Jordan, and I'm currently staying somewhere in Taylorsville. My experience with housing insecurity has been that it was just too easy for our landlord to kick us out of our home that we've lived in for 8 years, that we've taken care of, paid our rent, you know, never had any problems with us or anything. And for him, he found out that he could kick us out and apply for low-income housing tenants and get for the same property that's not worth that much because it's very small and a crappy house, very old house, and get about $1,400 a month, which we were paying $800 a month because it's very, very tiny. So it was just simple for him. He was just like, oh, I could get this much more, and I know you guys won't pay it, but somebody else will, so get the hell out. He didn't tell us at the beginning. He said he was making excuses, and I think because he didn't want to tell us. But then later on, he came, you know, to see something on the property, and my mother-in-law was there. And she had just kind of made small talk with him, and he told her. He had said, he's like, oh, yeah. He's like, you know, I can get way more for this property if I apply for low-income housing, blah, blah, blah. And she's the one who later told us, and we were both kind of like, what the? He actually texted us and said, you have until the end of the following month, which was exactly 45 days away, to be out. He just said, hey, it's not going to work out. We're just going to demolish the property and we need you out by the end of, you know, the next month. And on that date, it was 45 days. And initially I'd freaked out, you know, because I'm like, 45 days is not a sufficient amount of time to move, you know, let alone move suddenly. Like when you're planning to move, you have an idea, you're making arrangements in your home, you're saving money, you're making plans. But when it's suddenly yanked out from under you, not only do you not have savings, you haven't even mentally grasped the idea of that your home that you've spent such a large amount of time living in and loving because it's your home is going to be yanked out from under you and not a damn thing you can do about it.
So what's a tenant to do in such a situation? They might talk to this man.
Okay, my name is Martin Blaustein. I am the managing attorney for Utah Legal Services. I specialize in housing cases, landlord-tenant specifically.
Blaustein says that most tenants who come by want information on the rights they have regarding evictions, living conditions that need repair, and whether or not they can withhold their rent when their landlord fails to address those concerns. Data from the Princeton Eviction Lab show an average of 7.61 evictions happened in Utah each day in 2016. I asked Blaustein what the likely causes were of those evictions.
In Utah, the greatest majority of cases that lead to evictions are non-payment. If a tenant doesn't pay the rent money within a certain amount of time, that basically initiates what they call a three-day pay or quit. If the tenant doesn't pay the rent within that third day, the landlord doesn't have to accept it after, let's say, on the fourth day. Mm-hmm. That then leads to a summons and complaint. And if it's a non-payment case, the landlord will prevail in court, and then the courts have an obligation to add treble damages to that. And so if you're paying $1,000 a month in rent, it now jumps to $3,000, plus attorney's fees and court costs. So now you're looking at by the time you vacate the premises, a judgment in the $5,000 category.
And this could be tricky for someone to pay who in the first place couldn't afford to make their rent.
It could be tricky. If you can't afford to make your rent, then you're going to be gone. They're going to force you out. And that leads you into the next phase. Now you're being evicted. You have a huge judgment against you. And where do you go after that in terms of finding another place to live?
Right.
And oftentimes, if there's an eviction on your record or if there's a complaint filed against you, landlords do routine background checks. They will pick that up and then not rent to you. So you're basically blackballed within the system.
And does that happen with just one eviction then?
One eviction could do that, yes. If you're being evicted, if a landlord does a background check and it shows that you've been evicted for non-payment of rent, then why will that new landlord rent to you if your credit is now an issue?
Well, for this show, someone related their experience to me. They said they were good tenants in the same house for 8 years, and last year their lease changed to month to month, and recently their landlord told them to find a new place to live, gave them, 45 days to get out. How do you interpret this situation, and is it common to hear something like this?
It's pretty common in a state where a great majority of your leases are basically month to month. And the scenario you just spoke about is a person living in a year-to-year lease, which now converted from year-to-year to month-to-month. Mm-hmm. Month-to-month essentially means that if you want to vacate as a tenant, you got to give your landlord 15 or 30-day notice. Or if the landlord wants you gone, it's the same rule. He gives you a 15 or 30-day notice. Biggest problem or the biggest downside with those notices for tenants is that the vacancy rate in the state in Utah County is so low that it's almost impossible to find a place during that 15 or 30-day period.
What reason does a landlord need to give for you to leave if you're on a month-to-month?
If it's month-to-month, the landlord doesn't need to give you any reason. The landlord's decided he wants the property, and he serves you with a 3-day notice or a 15-day no-cause notice to vacate. You can't defend that. Mm-hmm. There's no defense. It's not a cause state where the landlord has to have cause to evict you. The only cause is the landlord's whim, which means that if you have a disagreement with your landlord over anything, the landlord might decide he's not going to rent to you, and you have no defense to that.
Well, are there any set standards for leases and evictions and all of this in Utah, or does it vary city by city?
Well, there are some standards, and the primary standards, for example, is that landlords have an obligation to provide what they call as habitable housing. What is habitability? Lots of landlords will clean the properties and make them fairly habitable. In other words, you have heat, you have hot water, you have glass, in your window panes. So there's essentially standards, and then there's the Fit Premises Act, which is essentially a useless piece of legislation, because it basically says that if you want something done, you've got to give the landlord written notice of what needs to be done, and usually it's a pay or vacate. It's not a pay or vacate, but it's a statement demanding basically you have to give the landlord notice saying that things need to be repaired and giving them a certain amount of time to fix it. If the landlord doesn't do that, then you could do what they call as a repair and deduct. I've never seen anybody really be successful with a repair and deduct. Because what normally happens is that tenants get annoyed with the fact they don't have heat in the wintertime.
Sure.
So they withhold their rent. Withholding the rent automatically leads to an eviction. So by the time the case goes to court, the only issue at the possession hearing is whether or not the rent's been paid. The issue of the conditions of the premises never even gets argued on the day of the possession hearing. It's a pretty one-sided scenario, because you can't raise the fact that you haven't had any heat in wintertime as a defense to why you haven't paid rent.
Well, I mean, to me, especially in Utah where it's cold in the winter, it seems like a reasonable argument to make.
It's a reasonable argument to make, except the Fit Premises Act specifically states you cannot withhold your rent for any reason.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of tenants, maybe from out of state, will decide, I'm not going to pay the rent unless you get the water turned back on or unless you fix the pipes. And then the landlord will say to you, well, if you don't pay me the rent money, I'm going to kick you out. And the tenant will say, okay, try. And they tries. And to the tenant's chagrin, they'll wind up getting an eviction action. The issue of no water or no heat won't even come up during that initial hearing. You'll be on the street mm-hmm. before you even get to the issue of why you didn't pay.
And this is a Utah law?
This is Utah.
Do they have similar laws in other states?
Yeah, there are some states that you really have some teeth in repair and deduct. California, for example, if the place is not habitable, your defense is, I'm not paying the rent. And the process is takes a lot more time to evict you as opposed to the three-day notice, three-day eviction, mm-hmm. three-day summons and complaint. You're in court within 10 days of the summons and complaint being filed. It doesn't give you a lot of time to defend. Oftentimes, if a tenant says, I paid the rent money, there isn't even enough time to get a copy of a canceled money order to show to court that the landlord has actually accepted and cashed that check. Usually takes 30 days. So,
I mean, you offer some legal advice to tenants looking for it. How often do you think tenants come away having the upper hand in these cases?
Usually the tenants have the upper hand is when the lease has specific provisions that give the tenants greater rights than what the legislature has granted to them.
Hmm. So it can change lease to lease then?
It can change lease to lease. So tenants need to be aware what's in the lease. Oftentimes tenants don't read the lease, and if they read the lease, they would know that how they would define their rights. These are my rights. It says right here in the lease that you've got to give me a 30-day notice to vacate as opposed to a 15-day notice. Mm-hmm. Also, lots of landlords will have you sign a one-year lease, and then in the middle of the lease, they'll give you a 30-day notice to vacate, even though the lease doesn't end until Christmas. Mm-hmm. And so your defense, you're in the driver's seat, for example, when the landlord gives you a 15-day or 30-day notice, and your lease doesn't end for several more months or several, you're also in the driver's seat when the landlord decides to sell the property. And you still have lease time. And so the new owners, when they buy the property, they take the property subject to the lease, which means a new owner can't come to you and say, I just bought the property. I want you out of here. The tenant's going to say, I'm not going anyplace. I've got a lease here. And so that's when a tenant is in the driver's seat. And oftentimes, tenants will see some cash payments being made. You want me out? You're going to have to pay. They're going to pay me to get me out. So you're looking at a $2,000 or $3,000 or $5,000 payment for the new owner to force the tenant to vacate the property.
I mean, here at Utah Legal Services, you're helping some of these people who usually don't have the upper hand. So just kind of keeping that in mind, are there any policies you would recommend to help even the playing field?
You know, I think that landlords have almost, right now, they have almost exclusive control over renting to you, but also they have almost exclusive control on whether or not you're going to be able to rent another property. What I mean by that is if your landlord doesn't like you for some reason, you got into an argument about the Super Bowl, for example, or the music was too loud. You don't know what he might say to a prospective landlord mm-hmm. regarding the quality of your rental. One negative reference to a future landlord could mean you're not going to get into the next property. And so that means the tenant always has to kind of play the landlord, always has to smile, always have to say the right things to the landlord, because the landlord might use that statement or that might disagree with something that will prevent the person from moving on to another rental or to another property. And you can't prove it because you'll never get a landlord to say what he's told a prospective landlord. It's almost like a fraternity. One landlord will talk to another landlord and you'll never ever know what those two people are talking about. Mm-hmm. Could be racial, could be sexual, could be things that the landlord has done something wrong. He might be the worst landlord in town, but he has the control over your life in terms of where you're going to live in the future, because future landlords want to know what that prior landlord is going to say.
So you think there should be some sort of legislation to address that?
Legislation, you know, how do you control what people say to each other?
I don't really know.
When it's on a phone or it's on, where it's a text message, people are going to be free to communicate. Any kind of laws that should be created, I think landlords should be basically probably prohibited from giving references at all. I mean, no references. Then I'd have my friend opposing counsel would say that his clients, his landlord, should have the right to identify those tenants that are going to potentially going to do damage to that rental property.
What can tenants and landlords do to, is this a communication problem? Is it what can they do to better their relationship?
Okay. I don't think it's a power problem. And the power problem is landlords have it and the tenants want to live and they don't want to be bothered by their landlords. So the landlords have the power and the legislature granted the power to them. If the landlord for some reason doesn't like you and you're in a month-to-month lease, the power is, I'm going to force you to vacate the premises. I want my daughter to move into that unit. And you got no say-so. And so the power really has to be that maybe I have to work towards not renting any longer, and maybe I have to think about buying a place, because that's gives you more security. Of course, it costs a lot of money to buy, and then there are a lot of people who rent like renting. Mm-hmm. And so they like the rental lifestyle, and so they remain there. But it really comes down to a power struggle, the power issue. Landlords have it, tenants don't, and it's not going to change anytime soon.
Well, Martin Blaustein from Utah Legal Services, thank you so much for talking with me.
Okay, Emily, thank you.
What concerns do you have about housing in Utah? Weigh in at KCPW's Facebook page, KCPW 88.3, or feel free to email us at comments@kcpw.org with your feedback and questions. Thanks to the KCPW team for their support of this show, as well as to Andrew Shaw, who produced the show's theme music. And thank you for tuning in. You can find podcasts of In the Hive at kcpw.org. Up next is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Emily Means. Thanks for listening.